Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Steel Nation Radio, presented by Steelers Takeaways. I'm Mike Pelaya of SteelNationAssociation.com. With me, as always, is my co-host and author of the book Steelers Takeaways, Ron Lipick. How's it going today, Ron?
It's going great. Thanks. And, you know, we're lucky today because we've got Dale Lally here on the line. And Dale is the writer for the Washington Observer Reporter and has got some great insight onto the Steelers of... If you don't follow Dale, by the way, you should follow him on the Washington Observer Reporter's just for coverage of Steelers and all things sports. But also, he's got a blog, NFL from the Sidelines, that you should definitely follow because he's got some great insight. And Dale, you know, we're happy to have you on the line here. So I guess to start off with, and just talking to you about the Steelers offseason, you would think from fans' point of view, what you see on Twitter and so forth, that the Steelers had a Cleveland Browns type of season. And, you know, everyone's sort of depressed almost over just how bad that last game was and then the offseason that followed. With you having an insight, you talk to players, you talk to the front office, can you give us a little sense of what they're feeling about the offseason, about the potential for this team next year?
Yeah, I think that, you know, they're still feel like the arrow's trending up with this team. You know, I think when you look at the defense especially, with, you know, basically, what, 8 out of 11 starters that finished the season were guys who had three or less years of experience, which is pretty amazing. They've completely rebuilt that defense. You know, they'll get Cam Hayward back next year. They expect to be able to keep everybody that they want to keep because they've got, I mean, they have more cap space this year than they probably had the last 4 years combined. You know, $35 to $40 million, depending on what that cap comes in at, and nobody's real sure. I mean, you can estimate right now what it's going to be, but typically those estimates come in a little bit lower than what's expected. And so, you know, I expect the Steelers to have somewhere in the neighborhood of $35 to $40 million to spend, which is just ridiculous for them. And you know, they've got some big ticket guys that they have to sign, but they certainly have the space to do it. So, you know, the team is feeling very confident. They feel like they're going to be able to re-sign, you know, Le'Veon Bell and get Antonio Brown's contract extension done, you know, re-sign Stephon Tuitt. There's a lot of different stuff there that they want to get done this offseason. You know, you have to pick up the option on left. But, you know, when you look at the way that defense is trending, I think they feel like they have a pretty good nucleus there now of players where, you know, they're only going to get better. The more they play, I mean, you know, the more Artie Burns and Javon Hargrave and Sean Davis are on the field. I mean, you know, all of those guys, other than Hargrave, and he missed a couple of games, didn't play a full season last year. So they feel pretty confident in those guys moving forward. And, you know, I think offensively, you know, you have the possibility of getting Martavis Bryant back. We'll see what happens with Ladarius Green. But they can add some components to that this offseason. And this could be a much better team in 2017.
And I wanted to sort of jump in on the, you know, getting folks back. Was it underestimated how much, especially in the New England game, where pressure up the middle is such a big deal in that kind of game against Brady? Was it underestimated how much Hayward was missed in a game like that, where that's really where he shines in that kind of environment?
Yeah, and that was the game. You know, I mean, he got hurt the week before they played New England. The week before, he didn't play against New England the first time. Obviously, didn't play against them the second time. And you're right. I mean, they won. You know, they went on that winning streak after he went out of the lineup. But my goodness, they could have used that guy. You know, on a full time basis, especially in that game where, you know, you need to, as you said, pressure up the middle. You know, teams. The Patriots were able to kind of scheme to take care of Stephon Tuitt in that game, you know, and you just didn't get the pressure up the middle that you would have wanted. Javon Hargrave got there once early, but, you know, Cam Hayward, you didn't just so much miss him in terms of what he brings on the field, but what he brings off the field as well. Now, he was around constantly, but he's not out on the field in the huddle. You know, and looking in guys' eyes and saying, hey, you know, this is what we need to do here. And he's been around, I mean, he's one of the more experienced guys on that defense, and he is without a doubt the vocal leader of that defense, and they certainly missed him in that football game.
What about a guy like Lawrence Timmons, who is a free agent this year? I mean, he's put up some phenomenal years for the Steelers and actually had a really good – this past season. Are they going to look to bring him back? And obviously it's not going to be at the level he's been paid the last 3 or 4 years, but is he in the fold and as a guy they can put in for another 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, I think so. And you know, the players joke around that he's basically Mike Tomlin's son because he's the first round draft, you know, Mike's first draft pick.
That's right.
And there is a level of comfort there with Mike Tomlin and Lawrence Timmons. And, you know, even though Timmons has been in the league for a long time, he's still just 30. You know, and he dropped some weight last year to improve his speed. I think he knew that, you know, 2015 wasn't his best season. He needed to get a little faster. And we saw James Ferrier do the same thing toward the end of his career, where he was playing basically at about 215 pounds his last couple of seasons. You know, but he was able to be effective doing that because of the knowledge that he brought to the game. Well, I think Lawrence Timmons is in that same spot right now in his career. And he's, you know, to be quite frank, he's a better athlete than Ferrier was. And Ferrier was an outstanding athlete, but Timmons is a freakish athlete. You know, he's played at 250 early in his career. He bulked up. I know they still list him at, what, 235 or 238, whatever it is they list him at. But he was up, you know, above 250, you know, a few years ago. And he really bulked up. And now he started to go the other way and start losing that weight to increase his speed. And his knowledge and ability to play with Ryan Shazier and how they play off of each other, I think we saw down the stretch this year how effective that can be. And they'd like to, I think they feel like he has at least three more good seasons left in him, if not more than that.
I'm sure Vince Williams is thrilled. Though I know they get along well, but I'm sure he's probably feeding them some high-calorie food on the side. Trying to fatten him up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, those guys, the contract that they signed Vince Williams to is not starter money. That was kind of an insurance policy, and it keeps Vince Williams around. He's a core special teams player. He's a guy that, you know, if you're going to have a winning team, you need to have guys like that around, guys who can step in and play at a starter's level. If something happens, and Vince Williams is one of those kind of guys. Sure, he could have gone somewhere else and started, you know, but I think he feels very comfortable here. You know, now his brother is here as well. You know, so this is a situation where Vince Williams wanted to be in Pittsburgh, regardless of whether he was going to get a shot to start or not. You know, and as we've seen over the years with the injuries to both, well, not so much Timmons, but Shazier, he ends up starting, you know, 3, 4, 5 games a year anyways.
And his coverage skills seem to really improve.
Yeah, and again, that's the comfort level that you get the longer you're in the game. The better you understand the scheme, the better you understand what opponents are trying to do against you. And that's, you know, I've talked with Keith Butler about that, and he said, you know, those first 3 or 4 years for a linebacker, you're getting by strictly on your, you know, on your athleticism. He said then in years like 5, 6, 7, 8, that's when it all really comes together for you in terms of your athleticism and knowledge of the game. So then later in your career, as your skills start to wane, you're getting by strictly on knowledge. Well, you know, I think Vince Williams is in that prime zone right now where he understands the scheme, understands what he's supposed to be doing, and he's also at the top of his game.
I want to stick with the linebackers, excuse me, for a second. And James Harrison, again, put up a great season. He's just getting better with age. Free agent as usual. Is he coming back for another year or two? And if he does come back, is it going to be on a year-to-year basis at this point, just given his age? I mean, he can clearly still play, and he says he wants to. Is there room for him as far as the Steelers are concerned?
Oh, yeah, they definitely want him back. He wants to come back. I think they signed him to a 2-year deal so they can give him a little bit more of a signing bonus because he's played at a pretty cut rate the last the last couple of seasons. So, you know, I'm thinking maybe they give him a 2-year deal worth, you know, maybe $6-7 million. And the majority of that is, you know, let's say half of it is in signing bonus, just to give him the payment up front. And then if he retires next year, so be it. They have the cap space. But, you know, I think they preferably to do that. They don't like to do 1-year deals. Just because, you know, if the player has an outstanding year, as you saw with, for example, Alexander in Buffalo this year, a guy they signed on the cheap, and he goes out and gets 13 sacks this season. Now all of a sudden he's a free agent again, and you can't re-sign him because you're not going to pay, you know, for 13 sacks. You know, you look at that and say, you know, what do you pay that guy? He's 33 years old, but he had 13 sacks last year. He's never had a season like that before in his career. So preferably the Steelers like to do two-year contracts with those kind of guys. And, you know, if they cut them, if they end up having to cut them, they cut them.
So sort of taking a walk around the horn, you know, there are a few spots where if you look at this year and where they need to go to get to the Super Bowl next year and beat a team like New England, that you have to look at and say, this is those three spots that they have to improve. And the one of those, ironically, is the number two wide receiver spot, where they have seemingly a lot of number three and number four guys, but not sort of a plug-and-play number two guy. Now, I know Brian comes back, but it's difficult to trust. He hasn't even been reinstated yet, so you don't know 100% if that's even going to happen, that that will even be decided until after the draft, because the NFL tends to drag its heels on that. So how do you look at that number two spot, and how comfortable is the team on that? And sort of a second point to that question is, Ben didn't have the year that we all sort of expect Ben to have. He had a solid year, but it wasn't spectacular. And how much of that number two wide receiver dilemma sort of fed into Ben's struggles?
Well, I think they go hand in hand. I mean, you know, when Sammy coach was going well early in the season, Roethlisberger was off to a great start. You know, then when he injured the hand and really tailed off and kind of basically disappeared from the offense, you know, you would see flashes here or there from other guys, you know, stepping up in certain games or certain situations and making a catch, but it just wasn't consistent. And, you know, I think that really hurt them. It hurt Antonio Brown's numbers this year because, of course, you know, without any viable number two option there, you know, teams were basically able to almost triple team him at times in you know, key situations. So, you know, I really think that hurt them. You know, maybe that guy's Ladarius Green next year. Maybe it's Martavis Bryant. I think they're going to draft the guy just because of the contract situations with some of the other guys that they have. And they like to keep a good young receiver in the pipeline, you know, if the value is there. And they've had some pretty good luck there taking guys in their third and fourth, fifth, even sixth round in the case of Antonio Brown. You know, so you take a shot on a guy like that and hope that you, you know, find another star in the waiting. But they do need to upgrade that. There's no doubt about it. You know, there just wasn't any kind of consistency there. And early in the season, you know, it looked like Sammy Coates might be that guy. And then that hand injury just lingered with him the rest of the season. And he lost confidence. You could see it. The team knew it. You know, people were asking why was Coates the guy in the playoff game over DeMarcus Ayers? Well, I mean, you already have two other DeMarcus Ayers. Antonio right. Brown is you know, DeMarcus Ayers on steroids. You know, Eli Rogers is basically, I mean, he's a better player than DeMarcus Ayers. So you have, you know, you already had two of those Smurf type receivers. You needed a down the field threat against the Patriots, and as we saw, those plays were there. They were open. They just didn't make the play. And I really thought the key to that you know, that one of the key moments in that football game against the Patriots was Sammy Coates not bringing down that catch early in the first quarter. You know, if he makes the catch there, it flips the field at the very least. The Steelers at least get a field goal out of that. And all of a sudden, the Patriots say, you know, maybe we have to pay a little bit of attention. We can't automatically double-team Antonio Brown every opportunity here because this guy can beat us down the field. And that didn't happen, and so the Patriots just continued to play, you know, like they were playing, and it just there was no continuity to the Steelers' offense.
Now, what about a guy like...
And that seemed clear, yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead, yeah.
Well, I was just... So you kind of mentioned they have Ayers, they have Rodgers. You know, a guy like Wheaton's probably gone. So if they were to draft another receiver, we're looking at one of those taller guys that can get down the field in the red zone, third down type of conversion guy, do you think? Or, I mean, what style of receiver do you think they're going to go after if you even have anybody in mind?
You know, I think it depends on... It largely depends on what's available. I think they wouldn't mind having a guy that returns kicks. You know, that wouldn't be a bad thing to have. You know, as we saw all season this year, returning kickoffs was an issue. They don't have, you know, Antonio Brown as good as he is on punt returns, and still can be a factor there. You don't want him back returning kicks, and you know they just didn't have anybody there that he's a game breaker type, and so you know, you wouldn't mind having a guy like that. If he's also tall, so be it. That's even better. So you know, I think there's, you know, they come in all shapes and sizes. This draft is just loaded with those kind of skill players at really every position but quarterback. So I think there's going to be value throughout this draft. You know, it just depends on, you know, what kind of grades they have on guys and you know, what they feel like, you know, maybe they draft two. I don't know. A lot's going to depend on, you know, what kind of value is there.
So flipping the field and talking about defense a little bit, and, all game, all offseason long, we've heard, they should have done man press more. Yeah, but the pass rush wasn't there, right? So the more you do that, and the pass rush doesn't get there, that the more you're at risk even further than if it's played zone. So when you look at this defense and you say, if I could fix one thing, is it the pass rush? Is it the corner play? What would you address if you could bring in one guy in one position? What would that look like to you?
Well, I definitely think they need another guy off the edge, and whether that comes through the draft or whether that comes, you know, in free agency, which I kind of doubt. I mean, they'd have to really break the bank there to do that. But they need somebody in the pipeline to eventually replace James Harrison. You know, the plan going into last season was to play Jarvis Jones on full time on the outside. You know, and that didn't work out. You know, they had to give him a shot. They had to see what they had in him. It didn't work out. But they need to address that again. I like what I saw from Artie Burns this year. I like Ross Cockrell as a player. You know, they do need at some point here to replace William Gay. He was the guy when they went to man defense against the Patriots a few times. He was the guy that the Patriots went after in the slot. Now the Patriots—that's what they do. I mean, they go after whoever's in the slot, regardless, because that's where Edelman's lined up. That's where their main guys are lined up at. But you need to get better there. And to play man defense, your slot corner has to be an outstanding man cover guy. He can't be a guy who's a zone corner masquerading as a slot guy. So that's something they have to do. And they have to decide if that's Sanquez Golson is that guy. And that's what they drafted him for. They took him in the second round. Or they need to figure out if it's time to, perhaps move on and take another guy. You can't have enough good corners in this league. You know, so if they go out and draft another corner in the second round this year, or even in the first round, I'm not going to say, wow, that was a bad pick, because you can't have enough of those good cover guys.
So you look at the pass rush in New England. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just got one more question there kind of on the corners. You know, you mentioned Golson, and do you have a feeling on what their thoughts are? I mean, he obviously hasn't taken the field once yet in two seasons. Are they close to giving up on him, or are they going to give him another chance? I mean, I guess they'll take him to camp at a minimum, see what he has. But if they have to make some decisions come draft time, I mean, do you have any initial thoughts on what their thoughts are with him?
Well, you know, like I said, I think, you know, when a guy gets hurt like that 2 years in a row, you start to wonder a little bit. Now, he didn't have injury issues in college. And again, they liked him enough to take him in the second round, so they're not going to give up on him yet. But they certainly have to have some kind of backup plan there. And that's one thing the Steelers always, regardless of what fans might think or whatever, they always cover their bases. You know, they may go out and sign a guy, and you'd say, why would they sign that guy? You know, he's not going to be a starter. You wouldn't want him to be a starter. But they like to have everything going into the draft. Well, if we had the lineup today, we would have starters at every position. We don't have to go in and draft a certain position. So that's one thing that they like to do. You know, whether those guys end up being a part of the team or making the team or being a starter, that's up to them. But I think, you know, it wouldn't surprise me to see them add another corner. I mean, when we met with Art Rooney a couple weeks ago, I guess it is now, you know, he said, hey, we need to continue to upgrade the secondary, and we need to improve the pass rush. Well, I mean, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they go, you know, edge rusher and cornerback in the first two rounds of this draft this year. Wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Well, and that's what sort of surprised me with New England, because, frankly, with the exception of making Cameron Hayward healthy, what can you really change about that pass rush? Because anyone they draft this year will likely at best be a pass rush specialist, and I'm not sure at their pick they're going to find that elite pass rusher that's going to step in and create pressure this year. Now, maybe they do, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. But if not, even if they get Hayward back, you know, what can they do differently to change how that defense performed against New England? I mean, do you think that there's a lot they can do to make that a different type of performance than what we saw at the end of this year?
You know, I think when you're playing New England, and so much of it depends on where you play New England. You know, I thought when they played New England in Pittsburgh, they did a pretty good job. You know, Edelman had, nine catches or whatever it was, but it was for like 70 yards. You know, you'll give that up. You know, I didn't think New England was outstanding on that day. but, you know, when they went up there, it's a different animal up there when they played them up there. So I think that's a big part of it. But I think with the guys that they have, Javon Hargrave, you know, everybody says that the biggest jump that you make as a player is between your first and second seasons. You know, I expect him to be a bigger part of the pass rush next year. So now you have three rotational guys that you can rotate in there and, you know, get pass rush out of, in addition to Tua and Hayward. You know, if they get another edge rusher, you know, I don't know that the idea next year is to have James Harrison be your 16-game starter. I think eventually you'd like whoever that young guy is to come in and maybe take over, or at least spell him on occasion. You know, I think Bud Dupree is going to continue to get better as a pass rusher. The one thing, when the Steelers drafted him, I didn't think it was a good pick for that year, specifically because of the reason that you just mentioned. You're not going to get much out of that guy in that first season. But, you know, last year was supposed to be the year that he was going to break out. You know, he was more comfortable in the defense. He had a better idea of what he was doing. And we saw flashes of that, you know, when he came back. But you'd like to see a full season of that. Can he be a 10, 12, 14 sack guy? He certainly has the capability to make that jump. And so, you know, I think, these are young guys who are going to continue to get better. And I think that's what you hang your hat on going into New England the next time around. Maybe you have a better confidence. Maybe you have a better ability. If St. Clair's Golson works out, now maybe you have the ability to play a little more press man that you didn't have last year, because they were going to find the matchup problem with William Gay, no matter who he was matched up on.
So we have maybe a minute left here. Ed, you mentioned the draft was limited in quarterbacks. Is that good for Landry Jones in regards to the Steelers? I think Roethlisberger's coming back, but is Jones coming back?
You know, I would say more than likely. I think they like what he brings. He knows the offense. You know, if you look around the league at the backups around the league, he's not bad. I know a lot of Steeler fans hate him, and you know, I don't necessarily get that. He's a backup quarterback. He's not your future quarterback. He's the backup quarterback, and I think he has a spot.
That's it for another edition of Steel Nation Radio, presented by Steelers Takeaways.